Hey, everybody. Welcome into the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb. It is officially draft week. We are just 2 days away from the first round of the Major League Baseball draft. Remember, this year, just five rounds. Round one will be Wednesday night, June 10th at 7 p.m. You can see it on ESPN and MLB Network. And then rounds two through five are on Thursday night, June 11th, starting at 5:30 p.m. And again, all five rounds will be televised on ESPN and MLB Network. We will finish up with these next 2 days with the last two of really the five college players who it looks like the Orioles are considering with that number two pick. And Mike Elias, on a Zoom call with the media today, did say that there are five players that the Orioles are considering, and all signs point to these five that we're previewing being the guys that they are looking at. Last week on the pod, we looked at three of them. Emerson Hancock, the right-handed pitcher out of Georgia. Austin Martin, the infielder and potentially center fielder out of Vanderbilt. And then Nick Gonzalez, the infielder out of New Mexico State. Today, we'll look at the guy who's probably going to go number one. That's Spencer Torkelson out of Arizona State. And then tomorrow we'll finish up with the one pitcher on that list, or the other pitcher on the list, the left-hander Asa Lacy out of Texas A&M. But before we get to our talk today about Spencer Torkelson, the guys here on the Locked On Podcast Network, on the MLB Draft Preview shows, that is Taylor Blake Ward and Jeff Snyder. Remember, last week we plugged in a couple of their previews about who they thought the Orioles would take at number two. They were mostly agreed on Austin Martin, but they thought maybe they could stretch for Nick Gonzalez to save a little bit of money. But of course, with the fallout from the Astros sign-stealing scandal and them losing their first-round pick, there is only 29 picks in the first round this year, and the Orioles have the top pick in the compensation round, which gives them pick number 30. So really, on any other given year, it's like the Orioles have two first-round picks, as they will pick at number two and then again at number 30. So it's also interesting to really think about who will the Orioles take at 30, because it's almost like another first-round pick. So Jeff and Taylor talked about that, and you're going to hear a name that we have talked about a little bit before here on the pod last week, as they mentioned really two guys that could be a possibility for the Orioles at number 30.
We wrapped up the first round of the Locked On MLB Mock Draft in the first segment. Here in the second segment, we're going to go into the compensation round. And we're going to start with pick number 30, the Baltimore Orioles. Now, there's going to be a lot of items when it comes to the Baltimore Orioles of who they can pick, because they've got pick number two in the draft. They got number 30 and number 39, the team with the most picks at the top of the draft. They have an opportunity to take a first-round talent, which is what we are giving them here, Jeff. Pete Crow Armstrong, an outfielder out of Harvard Westlake High School here in Southern California, someone that I've been able to see for some time. But Jeff, tell me about this pick with Pete Crow Armstrong and why he would fit what the Baltimore Orioles are doing here.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. There was a point in time where Pete Crow Armstrong was viewed as like the prep player in this class, maybe around this time a year ago. And I always feel like with guys like him and a few other players we've seen, like with Bryce Rang and Blake Rutherford, it's almost like a kiss of death to get that label, because then everyone expects you to be this five-tool talent, and that's not what Pete Crow Armstrong is. What he is a guy with a fantastic hit tool, a great defender in center, a good athlete. Power maybe will never be a massive part of his game. It's not to say he can't have average power down the line, but I feel with some of these kids, we get too caught up in, oh, well, if he is this, then he should be this, instead of just, what does he do? He hits well. He's always hit. He hits everywhere he goes. He plays a good defense. And we know Baltimore is going to spend some money on pick 30. Pete Crow Armstrong is a guy who's going to cost a little bit more to sign, but the pedigree is there and the skill set is there of a first-round pick.
Yes, and this is a guy that, like you said, Jeff, he's not a five-tool talent, but a very talented player. And I will agree, at this time last year, I do believe that we saw him as one of the top prep players in the nation. Harvard Westlake, obviously a very talented program, does have a lot of major leaguers on their pedigree. One thing with Pete Crow Armstrong, and I'm going to call him PCA just to save some time, PCA does get unfair comparisons to Kevin Pillar and Kevin Kiermaier. Kevin Pillar more so because he played in the Trinity League down here in the Los Angeles region in Southern California, but he is such a good center fielder. He's a guy that's going to remain in center field. So the worst case scenario with Pete Crow Armstrong seems to be that you're going to get a fourth outfielder at worst, maybe a platoon guy at worst. That is not a bad thing, especially in the compensation round. You want him to be more. It's the first round. You always want that to be more. But if the floor is really that, I think it makes what makes him such a special player. One thing about him not being a five-tool player is the power is kind of the knock. Of this spring, he kind of answered some of those questions, had some loud exit velocities, just posted a video on Instagram the other day where he was hitting every exit velocity he had was close to 100. I don't think he broke 100, but he was close to 100 on all those marks. So I think he's a name that's on the rise. There's a good chance he's not here at 30, and the Baltimore Orioles do get a chance at Dax Fulton, who we mentioned at the 23rd pick. But Baltimore does have a lot of options in play, not only here at 30, but also at the 39th overall pick as well.
You know, it was best player available, so who knows? That could be anywhere. It could be just how you view things through your periscope. But we are going to see Baltimore get a first-round talent. I mean, this is the 30th pick because Houston doesn't have a pick. So they're getting a first rounder essentially here, and we know they're looking to try to hope that someone slides that they can use some of that extra money from having a high pick. We know they're looking here to grab whoever the top sliding talent is, and I think PCA is the guy who stands out.
So as you hear Jeff and Taylor there over on the Locked On MLB draft preview shows talk about Pete Crow Armstrong, and if you recognize that name, we talked about him a little bit last week with Max Herz when we had the voice of Andreal Baseball on to talk about Austin Martin, because Pete Crow Armstrong is one of those high school players who is committed to Vanderbilt but is a potential first-round pick. Now, I've seen a lot of mock drafts have Pete Crow Armstrong go number 19 overall to the Mets. As they talked about, an outfielder from Harvard Westlake High School in California, one of the best baseball high schools in the country. Recently, over the last decade, Lucas Giolito, Jack Flaherty, and Max Fried, all fantastic all-star level pitchers in the big leagues, have all come out of Harvard Westlake High School and have all been first-round picks right out of high school in three consecutive years, 2012 to 2014. But Pete Crow Armstrong would be their first first-rounder since 2014 if he went. But if he does drop to the Orioles, that would be a steal at pick number 30 to get a really good outfielder. And the other guy they mentioned right at the end was Dax Fulton. Dax is a left-handed pitcher who was also originally committed to Vanderbilt for college. But back in October, he flipped his commitment to Oklahoma. That's his home state. He's from Oklahoma. But Fulton, the guy who's being projected right now to go in the early second round in most mock drafts. So it'll be interesting to see if the Orioles will potentially take him at 30 or maybe that next pick after that in the second round at 39 as well. So that number 30 pick is interesting. We'll talk about that a little bit more tomorrow in our final draft preview episode. But today we're going to get to the guy who for a while was mocked to the Orioles at number 2. And that is the Arizona State first baseman Spencer Torkelson. A fantastic 3 years at Arizona State in 17 games in 2020 before the season was cut short. He was hitting .340 with a .600 on-base percentage, and he had 6 home runs, 25 homers as a freshman, 23 as a sophomore in 2019. One of the best power bats, probably the top power bat in this draft. And for a while, he was mocked at number 2, but recently, he's been looking at being the number 1 pick to the Detroit Tigers. But if the Tigers don't take him, seems pretty locked up that the Orioles would snag him at number 2. So to tell us more about Spencer, as a guy who watched and called his games for 3 years at Arizona State, and that is Josh Schaefer, who is one of the voices of Sun Devil Baseball on the Pac-12 family of networks. And Josh Schaefer joins us to tell us about Spencer Torkelson. And Josh, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
So we bring you on to talk Spencer Torkelson, and for Orioles fans, for really a good 3 or 4 month period, it looked like really from January 1st until about a month ago, almost it seemed, it was like Torkelson was going to be the guy that they were going to take at number 2, because it felt like it was pretty locked up that Austin Martin was going number 1 to the Tigers. Well, that has really flipped in the last month or so before the draft. And Torkelson's being mocked number one. So to start with that, from your perspective, had you seen anything, you know, was it the play of those 15 games they got this year that made that flip happen? And now a lot more people think the ASU first baseman's going number one.
You know, I got to be honest. I think that the reason why that has now flipped with Spencer presumably going number one at this point, I think the reason why is probably the shortened draft and the virus, to be quite honest with you. You know, coming into this season, there were a lot of players who were projected to go fairly high in the draft that maybe still had something to prove. And since his first summer on the Cape, I don't think Torkelson has had anything left to prove. I mean, he hit 25 home runs as a freshman, shattered the ASU home run record for freshmen, and then he went up to the Cape Cod League and everyone kind of thought, all right, let's see him hit with a wood bat. And I've heard some scouts say that they think he hits even better with a wood bat. And then he went back to ASU, did the exact same thing he did his freshman year. And, you know, he went up, he played a couple games on the Cape this past summer and played well. I mean, when people decided that they wanted to pitch to him. And then he also played for Team USA again. And the way that I look at it is that he came back for his junior year with his sights set on, you know, probably going top three in the draft and competing for a College World Series. For me, there was nothing else that he needed to prove. So the way that I look at it is there were a couple other guys on ASU's team this year that were projected to go fairly high in the draft that are maybe slipping a little bit because they only played, what, 15 games? Where for Spencer, you know, he's had these two elite seasons under his belt. He's played two summers for Team USA and for the Chatham A's in the Cape Cod Baseball League. He's proven that he can hit with an aluminum bat and a wood bat. He showed that in his 2.5 seasons, we'll say, at ASU and playing summer ball, he's played outfield because he was improving his range. He has become a fantastic defender at first base, where maybe his freshman year you could see that there might be a few gaps in his game. And he's really become an all-around strong defensive and offensive first baseman. So for me, I think he's simply jumped up to number one because he did not have a lot riding on the last, 40, 50 games of the season, when maybe some other players did.
Yeah, it makes sense because, you know, you look at the couple other guys who are being thrown around in that top five. You know, Austin Martin, despite a fantastic freshman year, you know, still didn't put up the numbers Torkelson did already as a freshman. Or a guy like Nick Gonzalez from New Mexico State, who had to kind of gradually come onto the scene. Then he got to the Cape last year and then took the jump into the top 10. But you mentioned it, you know, his freshman year, he comes in, hits 25 homers, hits 320 with a 440 on base, backs it up with 23 homers, a 351 average, and 440 on base last year. And then in 17 games this year, 6 home runs, a 340 average, and an on-base percentage of just a touch under 600. So from seeing him go freshman to sophomore to junior, and you seeing him up there in the Cape as well, you know, you talk about him having not much to prove, but had there still been parts of his game where you've seen him improve year to year?
Absolutely, defensively. And it's just not close for me. There were plays freshman year where maybe he'd get a little cut up drifting or caught up drifting back into the gap or kind of hugging the foul line down for or hugging down the first baseline. He, you know, misreads a ball or something, or he like charges into to make a play on the infield grass and maybe he gets caught up a little bit. That doesn't happen anymore. That was the biggest improvement in his game. And he wasn't bad by any means. I mean, he was one of the best players in the country. But you could see that maybe defensively there were some places where he needed to improve. And then toward the end of his freshman year at ASU, you know, ASU was fine. They were not a good team his freshman year. They were okay. And there were a couple times when Tracy Smith put him in left field. Kind of thought, what are they doing putting him in left field? And then whatever, he would go back to first base. But there were a couple innings where he'd start in left field or he'd go out and switch out to left field or whatever. And then when he went up to the Cape Cod Baseball League, he played solely right field. He did not play any first base his first year playing in Chatham. And when he came back to school, I talked to Tracy Smith and I said, do you have any, can you request where you want players to play, you know, position wise? And he said, yeah, I didn't do that though. And I think he knows Tom Holliday, the Chatham manager, fairly well. And I guess they had an understanding that maybe they didn't want Torque to play first base, because if you can make him an elite outfielder, then that frees up somebody else to play in the infield. It's just another roster spot for somebody else that's good in college baseball. So they put him in the outfield and he comes back to school and he's just so much better. He's got better range. He's got a better glove. He's a little bit faster. And I think that all kind of attributed to him improving as an outfielder, then coming back to school and playing solely first base.
Hey, back to the interview in just a sec, but wanted to tell you about Built Bars. They're tasty and they're healthy. It's a protein bar, but it tastes like a candy bar. You can get it in 16 different flavors. They're all covered in chocolate, easy to eat, and good for you as well. Great for a health-conscious person. Low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. Just 20 grams of protein in, for example, the peanut butter brownie bar, which that's the best flavor combination right there. Peanut butter brownie. You can't beat that one. Just 170 calories, 3 grams of sugar, 3 grams of net carbs. You can't beat that in a protein bar that's good for you, and it really tastes good as well. So you can go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your first order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at builtbar.com. Yeah, and that's kind of an important point, because I think, you know, one thing that was a knock against him and something that's still being written about is, you know, teams never really take a first baseman with the number one overall pick, because when you think first base, you think this guy's not, you know, versatile defensively. But from what you saw in the Cape and then this season in the outfield, you know, when he starts to make his way through the minors, and obviously he'll get more work, what's the confidence level now of Spencer Torkelson being an outfielder at the next level?
I'm not really sure. And there's a lot of guys who are coming out of prep ball or coming out of college, and you kind of think, you know, they might play this position, but I don't know. You could see them in the future moving to first base or something like this, or I don't know, moving to a corner outfield position. It's tough because the way that he's developed, I think that he is a pure elite all-around first baseman. But I think that if he got into minor league ball and maybe a team's confident with who they've got at first base at the moment and they want to see Spencer continue to develop, I think you could put him in a corner outfield position. He is far from the fastest player I've seen at ASU in the past few years, but he's not slow. And he's proven that he has good range with his glove. And he's proven in the Cape League that he can run down some balls in the outfield. So I think that the potential is there. I think there's a possibility. But honestly, I'm not sure. I think he obviously projects best as a first baseman, but we'll see.
So one more thing on just his hitting, because we know, you know, he might be projected as the number one hitter in this draft. And that's a big reason why it's looking like he could go number one. But you know, people, if you're not following Arizona State closely, you're going to see monster home runs, videos on Twitter of him hitting the ball deep. But he's a pretty polished all-around hitter too, it seems, despite the big power being his number one tool.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And the one thing that stood out about this guy from day one was the fact that he is not the typical power hitter that has a lot of home runs, but has a lot of strikeouts. He was never like that. You know, his first 2 years on the team, he was either number one or number two in free passes, whether it be hit by pitch or a walk or something like that. Freshman year, he led the team in walks. He struck out a little bit here and there. And then his sophomore year and his junior, he didn't really strike out at all. He's a very polished hitter, and he's been that way since day one. This year, you got to see a little bit more of his his ability of just putting the barrel of the bat on the baseball, because, I mean, you've seen it 100 times in his ASU career, but there were so many teams that absolutely refused to throw the ball to him this year. I mean, his intentional walks, I don't remember the exact number. It was like 11 or 12 or something by the time the season ended. I mean, that's ridiculous. And toss those in with the amount of walks that he had drawn, and he was like leading the nation in walks. Because guys didn't want to throw the ball to him, or they'd pitch him outside. But now he had to adjust the same way that the players who batted in front of him and behind him did. They had to figure out a way to get on base, because if you're intentionally walking Torkelson and the next guy's striking out or getting out, there's no reason to not intentionally walk him every single time he comes to the plate. Well, by the time the season was cut short, the guys in front of him and behind him were hitting the baseball. Alternatively, for him, he was adjusting to hit the ball where it was being thrown, and he just mashes the ball. It doesn't have to go 700 feet over the left field wall, but he barrels the ball up well, and he can drive it to any field. And I think that's another thing when we talk about development. One thing that has developed in his offensive approach, he hits the ball to all fields now. There were a lot of he had a lot of pull power his first 2 years, and on the Cape, and then for this shortened season we had this past spring, he can hit the ball to the opposite field very well. It is tough to find gaps in his offensive approach. It really is.
And really, that the big reason why, you know, despite maybe concerns, is he only a first baseman? That's why you take a guy like that number one, because he already seems pretty polished to be on the fast track to the major leagues. But this Arizona State team, it's going to be an interesting 2 days for them next week, because they know they're losing Spencer Torkelson. He's going to go number one or number two in the draft. But behind that, a good chunk of this lineup is full of juniors who are still projected to go fairly early in this five-round draft, between guys like Williams and Halver and Gage Workman as well. So, you know, where do those guys fall? And who's really the most impressive pro prospect out of those guys that they could lose from the lineup?
Going into the season, I think a lot of people were talking about Alika Williams. And his freshman year started out at second base with Drew Swift at short. And they kind of switched towards the end of the season. And Alika became the everyday shortstop. And Drew went over to second base. I think a lot of people were talking about him. And 2 years ago, his Cape League season was cut short, and then this past year, he ended up being an addition to Team USA. Meanwhile, Gage Workman, who did not necessarily struggle on the Cape, but he, two summers in a row, he was far from the best player statistically, I'll say. He was also the MVP of the All-Star game. So when the time came to, to show out in front of all the scouts and in front of all the fans on the Cape, he did that. He has phenomenal speed. He has a good bat. He has power. He has a great glove. And Gage played third base only at ASU the past 2 years. And in the Cape, he played primarily shortstop. I think Gage Workman is probably the best pro prospect out of those other ASU players that are, you know, potentially going to go in this draft. He's very versatile. He's got great speed. And he stepped onto the scene as a freshman a couple years ago in an all-freshman infield, which are the juniors that we could see go in this year's draft. Torque, Swift, Williams, and Workman. And he stepped in, and from the get-go, to me, other than Torque, obviously, from a defensive standpoint, I thought Workman was the best freshman in that infield. And he has continued to develop in all areas of his game. I think he has the highest pro potential. But then I think Williams is right behind him, because he was this tiny, lanky kid when he came to ASU a couple years ago. And now he's put on weight. He's gotten a lot stronger. And you can just tell by looking at him. You know, two summers on the Cape, both of them fairly short for a variety of reasons. And then just the way that he's developed at the plate as a sophomore at ASU, and then especially as a junior, there was a time when he was a freshman that he and Drew Swift would come up to the plate towards the bottom of the lineup, and you were interested to see what was going to happen. And then 2 years later, they're both hitting towards the top of the order, and you know that teams got to be careful when they pitch to him. So I think the two of Workman and Williams will both be relatively high. I think Workman's got the highest ceiling. And Trevor Hover is a guy that I thought had a lot to prove this year, that he could be one of the elite outfielders in this draft. Again, I like I said about Torque, he's far from the fastest player I've seen at ASU or in the Cape League. But the ability is there. He's got good range. He started really turning things around offensively by the time this season was unfortunately cut short. And I think he's a guy that you might see in this five-round draft too.
And you've seen a lot of talent over the last few years at Arizona State, and it's now showing with these guys, and even a couple of their incoming freshmen potentially could get taken in these five rounds. But last thing for you, Josh, wanted to bring it back to Torkelson before we let you go. You know, you've seen all these players on the Cape. You've seen all these players come through Arizona State and in the Pac-12 in general play against the Sun Devils. Was there a matchup that he had or a moment during his 3 years where you looked at Torkelson and watched the competition he was dominating and had that realization like, wow, this guy really could be a number one overall pick from Arizona State?
Connor, I don't even really know where to begin with this, to be totally honest with you. His first game at ASU, or his first opening day at ASU, there was like some rain and there was some, I don't know, it turned into a doubleheader against Miami of Ohio, I want to say. And he came up and hit a home run in both games of the doubleheader. I mean, just like obliterated this ball. And you're sitting in the press box and you're kind of looking at the other people in the press box and you're like, wow, that was just really far. Like, he really squared that ball up. And then it was tough because you didn't see it necessarily going into the game with Andrew Vaughn. But they are two very similar players, and I wish that we had seen them face off on the Cape a little bit more. Andrew Vaughn played in Wareham, and they opened the season at Chatham in 2018, and he hit a grand slam in, like, the eighth inning. And it was just the most predictable thing I've ever seen in my life. It was like, oh, don't throw it over the plate with the bases loaded. And they did, and it was a grand slam. And Torque wasn't there yet. And then Vaughn left, and then Torque showed up. So we never got that matchup on the Cape. But there were a lot of very intriguing matchups for him. I think the moment when I thought for sure this guy could be a top round or a top pick in the MLB draft was on the Cape. It was 2018, so his first year there, and it was at Kituit, and the game's getting long. Chatham was down 7-0 in the first two innings. They were down 9-2 by the fourth inning, and slowly but surely they've started coming back into the game, and there's a runner on base. Chatham's down two. It's getting dark and Kituit doesn't have lights, and their head coach is starting to stall a little bit because you have to play the full inning, and if the game gets called because of darkness, whatever happened in the top half of the inning is nullified if you don't play the bottom half. So it's starting to look like Kituit might be making a pitching change or arguing a call here as it gets a little bit darker. And Torque's batting, and the coach is yelling something from the dugout, and I don't know if he said anything, but he stepped out of the batter's box and looked toward the third base dugout, the Kituit dugout, and he, like, stared him down, and he stepped back into the batter's box, and he hit a game-tying home run, obliterated over the left field wall. And I remember calling this home run thinking, that was the most baller thing I've ever seen in my life. Just staring down the dugout, stepping back in and hitting the game-tying home run. And an inning later, Chatham scored the go-ahead and won in eight innings or whatever, and the final score was 10-9. And he hit a two-run bomb down the left field line, and he watched it go the whole time because he knew. He absolutely knew it was gone, and he knew that he was going to hit a home run stepping into the batter's box. And it was just one of those things where you thought, he's got all the tools, he's developed a lot in less than a year, and he's got the confidence to make it too. And that was one of the more impressive things I've seen him do.
Well, that is a number one pick move, if I've ever heard one right there. But, you know, Orioles fans were definitely excited to potentially get Torkelson, obviously, because it's flipped. A lot still hoping that maybe the Tigers are still just enough in love with Austin Martin to take him, whereas Torkelson could fall to the Orioles. Because, listen, just salivating thinking about him hitting in Camden Yards in a couple years. But Josh, thank you so much for joining us to talk about the guy who looks like he might just be the number one overall pick in this draft. And I hope you're staying safe as well.
Thanks, Connor. I appreciate it. You too.
So again, our thanks to Josh Schaefer from Arizona State for joining us to talk about Spencer Torkelson. Again, a great story there of him in the Cape Cod League, showing the confidence and showing what kind of hitter he can be at the next level. And that's one of the big reasons why, over the past few months, he's kind of jumped Austin Martin into that number one spot. And a lot of signs pointing to the Tigers taking Torkelson with the first overall pick on Wednesday. But again, if the Tigers don't, I think the Orioles would be right there to scoop up the big power-hitting first baseman from Arizona State. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see whether or not they can get him. But if not, Austin Martin or any of these guys we've been previewing, still great choices for the Orioles. We'll have one more preview tomorrow as we will look at Asa Lacy, and then we're going to look at the draft as a whole. Look at Orioles at pick number 30 and 39 as well. Mason McCray will be our guest on the pod tomorrow. He is an MLB draft contributor, also covers college baseball for Prospects 365, and he'll join us to talk about his final mock draft and what the Orioles might do with those first three selections that they have, but also give us some insight into Asa Lacy and why he is the top-ranked pitcher as well. We've also been talking about here on the Locked On Podcast Network, the network as a whole, and us here at Locked On Orioles continuing to make donations to local or national organizations fighting for civil rights, social justice, and end racism and police brutality. So for this month, Locked On is going to match every donation made in the month of June by the hosts of all the podcasts. And those funds will be sent to Black Lives Matter, the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, and Campaign Zero as well. So we're going to be donating here at the Locked On Podcast Network. We encourage you to join us as well. If you want to see more about the organizations that the network will be donating to, you can visit our website, and that'll also direct you on where you can donate as well to help out the cause. So again, one more episode this week before the draft, and the draft Wednesday and Thursday night. If you're liking what you're hearing here on the pod, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Give us a rating and a review. Really helps out the pod a lot. This has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Next up, tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Locked On MLB.